Majjhima Nikaya, number 26, Pasarasi Suttang, The Noble Search. Translated from the Pali by Tanissaro Bhikkhu. I have heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. Then, early in the morning, having put on his robes and carrying his bowl and altar robe, he went into Savatthi for alms. Then a large number of monks went to Venerable Ananda and said, "It has been a long time, friend Ananda, since we have heard a Dhamma talk in the Blessed One's presence. It would be good if we could get to hear a Dhamma talk in the Blessed One's presence." "In that case, Venerable Ones, go to the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin. Perhaps you will get to hear a Dhamma talk in the Blessed One's presence." "As you say, friend," the monks replied to Venerable Ananda and left. Then the Blessed One, having gone for alms, after his meal, on returning from his alms round, said to Venerable Ananda, "Ananda, let us go to the Eastern Park, the palace of Migara's mother, for the day's abiding." "As you say, Lord," Venerable Ananda replied to the Blessed One. So the Blessed One, together with Venerable Ananda, went to the Eastern Park, the palace of Migara's mother, for the day's abiding. Then in the evening, emerging from seclusion, he said to Venerable Ananda, "Ananda, let's go to the Eastern Gatehouse to bathe our limbs." "As you say, Lord," Venerable Ananda replied to the Blessed One. So the Blessed One, together with Venerable Ananda, went to the Eastern Gatehouse to bathe his limbs. Having bathed his limbs at the Eastern Gatehouse, coming out of the water, he stood in his lower robe, drying his limbs. Then Venerable Ananda said to him, "Lord, the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin is not far away. Pleasing is the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin. Delightful is the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin. It would be good if the Blessed One went to the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin out of sympathy." The Blessed One acquiesced through silence. So the Blessed One went to the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin. Now at that time, a large number of monks had gathered in the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin for a Dhamma discussion. The Blessed One stood outside the door, waiting for the discussion to end. On knowing that the discussion had ended, clearing his throat, he tapped at the door. The monks opened the door for him. Entering the hermitage of Ramaka the Brahmin, the Blessed One sat down on a seat made ready. As he was sitting there, he addressed the monks. "For what discussion are you gathered together here? In the midst of what discussion have you been interrupted?" "Lord, our interrupted Dhamma discussion was about the Blessed One himself, and then the Blessed One arrived." "Good, monks. It is fitting that you, as sons of good families, who have gone forth out of faith from home to the homeless life, should gather for Dhamma discussion. When you have gathered, you have two duties. either Dhamma discussion or noble silence. Monks, there are these two searches, ignoble search and noble search. And what is ignoble search? There is the case where a person, being subject himself to birth, seeks happiness in what is likewise subject to birth. Being subject himself to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, he seeks happiness in what is likewise subject to illness, death, sorrow, defilement. And what may be said to be subject to birth? Spouses and children are subject to birth. Men and women slaves, goats and sheep, fowl and pigs, elephants, cattle, horses and mares, gold and silver are subject to birth. Subject to birth are these acquisitions, and one who is tied to them, infatuated with them, who has totally fallen for them, being subject to birth, seeks what is likewise subject to birth. And what may be said to be subject to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement? Spouses and children, men and women, slaves, goats and sheep, fowl and pigs, elephants, cattle, horses and mares, gold and silver are subject to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement. Subject to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement are these acquisitions, and one who is tied to them, infatuated with them, who has totally fallen for them, being subject to birth, seeks what is likewise subject to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement. This is ignoble search. And what is the noble search? There is the case where a person, being himself subject to birth, seeing the drawbacks of birth, seeks the unborn, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding, himself being subject to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeing the drawbacks of aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeks the agingless, illnessless, deathless, sorrowless, undefiled, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding. This is the noble search. I too, monks, before my awakening, when I was an unawakened bodhisatta, being subject myself to birth, sought what was likewise subject to birth. Being subject myself to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, I sought happiness in what was likewise subject to illness, death, sorrow, defilement. The thought occurred to me, why do I, being subject myself to birth, seek what is likewise subject to birth. Being subject myself to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, why do I seek what is likewise subject to illness, death, sorrow, defilement? What if I, being subject myself to birth, seeing the drawbacks of birth, were to seek the unborn, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding? What if I, being subject myself to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeing the drawbacks of aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, were to seek the agingless, illnessless, deathless, sorrowless, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding? So at a later time, while still young, a black-haired young man, endowed with the blessings of youth in the first stage of life, and while my parents, unwilling, were crying with tears streaming down their faces, I shaved off my hair and beard, put on the ochre robe, and went forth from the home life into homelessness. Having thus gone forth in search of what might be skillful, seeking the unexcelled state of sublime peace, I went to Alara Kalama, and on arrival said to him, "Friend Kalama, I want to practice in this doctrine and discipline." When this was said, he replied to me, "You may stay here, my friend. This doctrine is such that a wise person can soon enter and dwell in his own teacher's knowledge, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge." It was not long before I quickly learned the doctrine. As far as mere lip reciting and repetition, I could speak the words of knowledge, the words of the elders, and I could affirm that I knew and saw, I along with others. I thought, it isn't through mere conviction alone that Alara Kalama declares, "I have entered and dwell in this Dhamma, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge." Certainly he dwells knowing and seeing this Dhamma. So I went to him and said, "To what extent do you declare that you have entered and dwell in this Dhamma?" When this was said, he declared, "The dimension of nothingness." I thought, not only does Alara Kalama have conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment, I too have conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment. What if I were to endeavor to realize for myself the Dhamma that Alara Kalama declares he has entered and dwells in, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge? So it was not long before I quickly entered and dwelled in that Dhamma, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge. I went to him and said, "Friend Kalama, is this the extent to which you have entered and dwell in this Dhamma, having realized it for yourself through direct knowledge?" "Yes, my friend." "This, friend, is the extent to which I too have entered and dwell in this Dhamma, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge." "It is a gain for us, my friend, a great gain for us that we have such a companion in the holy life. So the Dhamma I declare, I have entered and dwell in, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge, is the Dhamma you declare you have entered in and dwell in, having realized it for yourself through direct knowledge. And the Dhamma you declare you have entered and dwell in, having realized it for yourself through direct knowledge, is the Dhamma I declare I have entered and dwell in, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge. The Dhamma I know is the Dhamma you know. The Dhamma you know is the Dhamma I know. As I am, so are you. As you are, so am I. Come, friend, let us now lead this community together. In this way did Alara Kalama, my teacher, place me, his pupil, on the same level with himself and pay me great honor. But the thought occurred to me, this Dhamma leads not to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to stilling, to direct knowledge, to awakening, nor to unbinding, but only to reappearance in the dimension of nothingness. So, dissatisfied with that Dhamma, I left. In search of what might be skillful, seeking the unexcelled state of sublime peace, I went to Uttaka Ramaputta, and, on arrival, said to him, Friend Uttaka, I want to practice in this doctrine and discipline. When this was said, he replied to me, You may stay here, my friend. This doctrine is such that a wise person can soon enter and dwell in his own teacher's knowledge, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge. It was not long before I quickly learned the doctrine. As far as mere lip reciting and repetition, I could speak the words of knowledge, the words of the elders, and I could affirm that I knew and saw, I along with others. I thought, it wasn't through mere conviction alone that Rama declared, I have entered and dwell in this Dhamma, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge. Certainly, he dwelled knowing and seeing this Dhamma. So I went to Uddaka and said, To what extent did Rama declare that he had entered and dwelled in this Dhamma? When this was said, Uddaka declared the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. I thought, not only did Rama have conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment, I too have conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment. What if I were to endeavor to realize for myself the Dhamma that Rama declared he entered and dwelled in, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge? So it was not long before I quickly entered and dwelled in that Dhamma, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge. I went to Uddaka and said, Friend Uddaka, is this the extent to which Rama entered and dwelled in this Dhamma, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge? Yes, my friend. This, friend, is the extent to which I, too, have entered and dwell in this Dhamma, having realized it for myself through direct knowledge. It is a gain for us, my friend, a great gain for us, that we have such a companion in the holy life. So the Dhamma Rama declared he entered and dwelled in, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge, is the Dhamma you declare you have entered and dwell in, having realized it for yourself through direct knowledge. And the Dhamma you declare you have entered and dwell in, having realized it for yourself through direct knowledge, is the Dhamma Rama declared he entered and dwelled in, having realized it for himself through direct knowledge. The Dhamma he knew is the Dhamma you know. The Dhamma you know is the Dhamma he knew. As he was, so are you. As you are, so was he. Come, friend, lead this community. In this way did Uddaka Ramaputta, my companion in the holy life, place me in the position of teacher and pay me great honor. But the thought occurred to me, this Dhamma leads not to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to stilling, to direct knowledge, to awakening, nor to unbinding, but only to reappearance in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. So, dissatisfied with that Dhamma, I left, in search of what might be skillful, seeking the unexcelled state of sublime peace, I wandered by stages in the Magadhan country and came to the military town of Uruvela. There I saw some delightful countryside with an inspiring forest grove, a clear flowing river with fine, delightful banks, and villages for alms going on all sides. The thought occurred to me, how delightful is this countryside, with its inspiring forest grove, clear flowing river, with fine delightful banks, and villages for alms going on all sides. This is just right for the exertion of a clansman intent on exertion. So I sat down right there, thinking, this is just right for exertion. Then, monks, being subject myself to birth, seeing the drawbacks of birth, seeking the unborn, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding, I reached the unborn, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding. Being subject myself to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeing the drawbacks of aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeking the agingless, illnessless, deathless, sorrowless, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding, I reached the agingless, illnessless, deathless, sorrowless, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding. Knowledge and vision arose in me. Unprovoked is my release. This is the last birth. There is now no further becoming. Then the thought occurred to me, this Dhamma that I have attained is deep, hard to see, hard to realize, peaceful, refined, beyond the scope of conjecture, subtle, to be experienced by the wise. But this generation delights in attachment, is excited by attachment, enjoys attachment. For a generation delighting in attachment, excited by attachment, enjoying attachment, this, that, conditionality, and dependent co-arising are hard to see. This state, too, is hard to see. The resolution of all fabrications, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the ending of craving, dispassion, cessation, unbinding. And if I were to teach the Dhamma and others would not understand me, that would be tiresome for me, troublesome for me. Just then these verses, unspoken in the past, unheard before, occurred to me. Enough now with teaching what only with difficulty I reached. This Dhamma is not easily realized by those overcome with aversion and passion. What is abstruse, subtle, deep, hard to see, going against the flow, those delighting in passion, cloaked in the mass of darkness, won't see. As I reflected thus, my mind inclined to dwelling at ease, not to teaching the Dhamma. Then Brahma Sahampati, having known with his own awareness the line of thinking in my awareness, thought, "The world is lost. The world is destroyed. The mind of the Tathagata, the Arahant, the rightly self-awakened one, inclines to dwelling at ease, not to teaching the Dhamma." Then, just as a strong man might extend his flexed arm, or flex his extended arm, Brahma Sahampati disappeared from the Brahma world and reappeared in front of me. Arranging his upper robe over one shoulder, he knelt down with his right knee on the ground, saluted me with his hands before his heart, and said to me, "Lord, let the Blessed One teach the Dhamma. Let the one well gone teach the Dhamma. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who are falling away because they do not hear the Dhamma. There will be those who will understand the Dhamma." That is what Brahma Sahampati said. Having said that, he further said this: "In the past, there appeared among the Magadhans an impure Dhamma devised by the stained. Throw open the door to the deathless. Let them hear the Dhamma realized by the stainless one. Just as one standing on a rocky crag might see people all around below, so, O wise one, with all-around vision, ascend the palace fashioned of Dhamma. Free from sorrow, behold the people submerged in sorrow, oppressed by birth and aging. Rise up, hero, victor in battle. O teacher, wander without debt in the world. Teach the Dhamma, O blessed one. There will be those who understand." Then, having understood Brahma's invitation, out of compassion for beings, I surveyed the world with the eye of an awakened one. As I did so, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes, and those with much, those with keen faculties, and those with dull, those with good attributes, and those with bad, those easy to teach, and those hard. Some of them seeing disgrace and danger in the other world. Just as in a pond of blue or red or white lotuses, some lotuses, born and growing in the water, might flourish while immersed in the water, without rising up from the water. Some might stand at an even level with the water, while some might rise up from the water and stand without being smeared by the water. So, too, surveying the world with the eye of an awakened one, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes, and those with much, those with keen faculties, and those with dull, those with good attributes, and those with bad, those easy to teach, and those hard, some of them seeing disgrace and danger in the other world. Having seen this, I answered Brahma Sahampati in verse, "Open are the doors to the deathless, to those with ears. Let them show their conviction. Perceiving trouble, O Brahma, I did not tell people the refined, sublime Dhamma." Then Brahma Sahampati, thinking, "The Blessed One has given his consent to teach the Dhamma," bowed down to me and, circling me on the right, disappeared right there. Then the thought occurred to me, to whom should I teach the Dhamma first? Who will quickly understand this Dhamma? Then the thought occurred to me, this Alara Kalama is wise, competent, intelligent. He has long had little dust in his eyes. What if I were to teach him the Dhamma first? He will quickly understand this Dhamma. Then Devas came to me and said, "Lord, Alara Kalama died 7 days ago, and knowledge and vision arose within me. Alara Kalama died 7 days ago." The thought occurred to me, a great loss has Alara Kalama suffered. If he had heard this Dhamma, he would have quickly understood it. Then the thought occurred to me, to whom should I teach the Dhamma first? Who will quickly understand this Dhamma? Then the thought occurred to me, this Uddaka Ramaputta is wise, competent, intelligent. He has long had little dust in his eyes. What if I were to teach him the Dhamma first? He will quickly understand this Dhamma. Then Devas came to me and said, "Lord, Uddaka Ramaputta died last night, and knowledge and vision arose within me. Uddaka Ramaputta died last night." The thought occurred to me, a great loss has Uddaka Ramaputta suffered. If he had heard this Dhamma, he would have quickly understood it. Then the thought occurred to me, to whom should I teach the Dhamma first? Who will quickly understand this Dhamma? Then the thought occurred to me, they were very helpful to me, the group of 5 monks who attended me when I was resolute in exertion. What if I were to teach them the Dhamma first? Then the thought occurred to me, where are the group of 5 monks staying now? And with the divine eye, purified and surpassing the human, I saw that they were staying near Varanasi, in the deer park at Isipatana. Then, having stayed at Uruvela as long as I liked, I set out to wander by stages to Varanasi. Upaka, the Ajivaka, saw me on the road between Gaya and the place of awakening, and on seeing me, said to me, "Clear, my friend, are your faculties, pure your complexion and bright. On whose account have you gone forth? Who is your teacher? In whose Dhamma do you delight?" When this was said, I replied to Upaka, the Ajivaka, in verses, "All vanquishing, all knowing am I. with regard to all things, unadhering, all abandoning, released in the ending of craving, having fully known on my own, to whom should I point as my teacher? I have no teacher, and one like me can't be found in the world with its devas. I have no counterpart, for I am an arahant in the world. I, the unexcelled teacher, I alone am rightly self-awakened. Cooled am I, unbound. To set rolling the wheel of Dhamma, I go to the city of Kasi. In a world become blind, I beat the drum of the deathless. From your claims, my friend, you must be an infinite conqueror. Conquerors are those like me who have reached fermentation's end. I've conquered evil qualities, and so, Upaka, I'm a conqueror. When this was said, Upaka said, "May it be so, my friend," and, shaking his head, taking a side road, he left. Then, wandering by stages, I arrived at Varanasi, at the Deer Park in Isipatana, to where the group of 5 monks were staying. From afar they saw me coming, and, on seeing me, made a pact with one another, saying, "Friends, here comes Gotama, the contemplative, living luxuriously, straying from his exertion, backsliding into abundance. He doesn't deserve to be bowed down to be greeted by standing up, or to have his robe and bowl received. Still, a seat should be set out. If he wants to, he can sit down." But as I approached, they were unable to keep their pact. One, standing up to greet me, received my robe and bowl. Another spread out a seat. Another set out water for washing my feet. However, they addressed me by name and as friend. So I said to them, "Don't address the Tathagata by name and as friend. The Tathagata, friends, is a worthy one, rightly self-awakened. Lend ear, friends. The deathless has been attained. I will instruct you. I will teach you the Dhamma. Practicing as instructed, you will in no long time reach and remain in the supreme goal of the holy life, for which clansmen rightly go forth from home into homelessness, knowing and realizing it for yourselves in the here and now." When this was said, the group of 5 monks replied to me, "By that practice, that conduct, that performance of austerities, you did not attain any superior human states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of a noble one. So how can you now, living luxuriously, straying from your exertion, backsliding into abundance, have attained any superior human states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of a noble one?" When this was said, I replied to them, "The Tathagata, monks, is not living luxuriously, has not strayed from his exertion, has not backslid into abundance. The Tathagata, friends, is a worthy one, rightly self-awakened. Lend ears, friends. The deathless has been attained. I will instruct you. I will teach you the Dhamma. Practicing as instructed, you will in no long time reach and remain in the supreme goal of the holy life, for which clansmen rightly go forth from home into homelessness, knowing and realizing it for yourselves in the here and now. A second time, a third time, the group of five monks said to me, by that practice, that conduct, that performance of austerities, you did not attain any superior human states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of a noble one. So how can you now, living luxuriously, straying from your exertion, backsliding into abundance, have attained any superior human states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of a noble one? When this was said, I replied to the group of monks, do you recall my ever having spoken in this way before? No, Lord. The Tathagata, monks, is not living luxuriously, has not strayed from his exertion, has not backslid into abundance. The Tathagata, friends, is a worthy one, rightly self-awakened. Lend ear, friends. The deathless has been attained. I will instruct you. I will teach you the Dhamma. Practicing as instructed, you will in no long time reach and remain in the supreme goal of the holy life, for which clansmen rightly go forth from home into homelessness, knowing and realizing it for yourselves in the here and now. And so I was able to convince them. I would teach two monks while three went for alms, and we six lived off of what the three brought back from their alms round. Then I would teach three monks while two went for alms, and we six lived off what the two brought back from their alms round. Then the group of five monks, thus exhorted, thus instructed by me, being subject themselves to birth, seeing the drawbacks of birth, seeking the unborn, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding, reached the unborn, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding, being subject themselves to aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeing the drawbacks of aging, illness, death, sorrow, defilement, seeking the agingless, illnessless, deathless, sorrowless, unexcelled rest from the yoke. Unbinding, they reached the agingless, illnessless, deathless, sorrowless, unexcelled rest from the yoke, unbinding. Knowledge and vision arose in them. Unprovoked is our release. This is the last birth. There is now no further becoming. Monks, there are these five strings of sensuality. Which five? Forms cognizable via the eye. Agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, fostering desire, enticing. Sounds cognizable via the ear. Agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, fostering desire, enticing. Aromas cognizable via the nose. agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, fostering desire, enticing. Tastes cognizable via the tongue. Agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, fostering desire, enticing. Tactile sensations cognizable via the body. Agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, fostering desire, enticing. These are the five strings of sensuality. And any priests or contemplatives tied to these five strings of sensuality, infatuated with them, having totally fallen for them, consuming them without seeing their drawbacks or discerning the escape from them, should be known as having met with misfortune, having met with ruin. Mara can do with them as he will. Just as if a wild deer were to lie bound on a heap of snares, it should be known as having met with misfortune, having met with ruin. The hunter can do with it as he will. When the hunter comes, it won't get away as it would like. In the same way, any priests or contemplatives tied to these five strings of sensuality, infatuated with them, having totally fallen for them, consuming them without seeing their drawbacks or discerning the escape from them, should be known as having met with misfortune, having met with ruin. Mara can do with them as he will. But any priests or contemplatives not tied to these five strings of sensuality, uninfatuated with them, having not totally fallen for them, consuming them, seeing their drawbacks and discerning the escape from them, should be known as not having met with misfortune, not having met with ruin. Mara cannot do with them as he will. Just as if a wild deer were to lie unbound on a heap of snares, it should be known as not having met with misfortune, not having met with ruin. The hunter cannot do with it as he will. When the hunter comes, it will get away as it would like. In the same way, any priests or contemplatives not tied to these five strings of sensuality, uninfatuated with them, having not totally fallen for them, consuming them, seeing their drawbacks and discerning the escape from them, should be known as not having met with misfortune, not having met with ruin. Mara cannot do with them as he will. Suppose that a wild deer is living in wilderness glen. Carefree it walks, carefree it stands, carefree it sits, carefree it lies down. Why is that? Because it has gone beyond the hunter's range. In the same way, a monk, quite withdrawn from sensual pleasures, withdrawn from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first jhana, rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by directed thought and evaluation. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the stilling of directed thought and evaluations, enters and remains in the second jhana, rapture and pleasure, born of composure, unification of awareness, free from directed thought and evaluation, internal assurance. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the fading of rapture, he remains equanimous, mindful and alert, and senses pleasure with the body. He enters and remains in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, equanimous and mindful, he has a pleasant abiding. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the abandoning of pleasure and stress, as with the earlier disappearance of elation and distress, enters and remains in the fourth jhana, purity of equanimity and mindfulness, neither pleasure nor pain. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the complete transcending of perceptions of physical form, with the disappearance of perceptions of resistance, and not heeding perceptions of diversity, perceiving infinite space, enters and remains in the dimension of the infinitude of space. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the complete transcending of the dimension of the infinitude of space, perceiving infinite consciousness, enters and remains in the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the complete transcending of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, perceiving there is nothing, enters and remains in the dimension of nothingness. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the complete transcending of the dimension of nothingness, enters and remains in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Then again, the monk, with the complete transcending of the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, enters and remains in the cessation of perception and feeling. And, having seen that with discernment, his mental fermentations are completely ended. This monk is said to have blinded Mara. Trackless, he has destroyed Mara's vision and has become invisible to the evil one. Having crossed over, he is unattached in the world. Carefree, he walks. Carefree, he stands. Carefree, he sits. Carefree, he lies down. Why is that? Because he has gone beyond the evil one's range. That is what the Blessed One said. Gratified, the monks delighted in the Blessed One's words. End of Pasarasi Suttam.